This is the first time I've spoken about recovery. I've video blogged and I've written about recovery. And today I just wanted to record it so that I can share this, perhaps through a blog, and I can share it with clients and those that are interested in a first-hand account of an eating disorder recovery, and in particular anorexia. Very often people talk about anorexia in the sense of this classic disease where there's a lot of hopes and dreams about being perfect and beautiful and attractive and thin and skinny. And my experience isn't like that. My experience is not about being beautiful and thin. My experience is about being seen. My experience is about having a single success in my life. As I say that, I think that sounds quite sad, and at the time it was very sad that I, in my late teens, early 20s, could not see a single success that I had achieved. A poor track record in education meant that I didn't have any ambition left apart from being seen to be good at something. My success would have been back then to not feel so lacking in confidence, to feel so shy and unsure and so unimportant that I felt I didn't exist. My initial brush with anorexia was purely a set of processes that I did, a set of changes that I put in place to help myself be well. I suffered a range of minor illnesses, things like viruses and flu, glandular fever. And when I left home, and I suppose creating my own path in life, I decided I could make some changes. The changes were simple, they were cheap, but they culminated in me having weight loss. I had never experienced such a change in how people spoke to me, dealt with me, acknowledged me, than that moment that my body changed and I changed shape. The praise I received from friends around me meant that I pursued more of what I'd discovered by accident. I was pursuing this perfect, successful young person that I felt I was starting to become, known for nothing more than changing shape and being at last acceptable and part of the crowd. So with this newfound buzz of weight loss and shape, and that being so significant, I changed my style and the way I dressed. I got more praise. Now, this isn't about anybody's fault. This is about my experience and how we notice what's different and how that difference in the person when they experience it and how the attention makes them feel can spur them on. Now, we might think this is motivation, but sadly, we've got to keep the change going to still be noticed. So it's not always such a good thing. So as my body changed and people noticed me, and I started to feel that I was getting somewhere, that was the moment in my life that I didn't know, but I was being stalked by anorexia. I was starting down a path that would take me down many dead ends as I fought and challenged, colluded with an eating disorder. When an eating disorder takes grip, there is no pulling your socks up, there is no don't be silly, there is no it's just about food. It's all encompassing. It takes over your waking thoughts, your sleeping thoughts, your dreams. Every moment of every day is obsession, fear, and yes, terror at maintaining what you have to maintain and eventually avoiding those who will try to change you, who will want to point out that you have a problem. So you become isolated with your fear and your friend, your eating disorder. When I was in the grips of my eating disorder, my experience, I can recall how it slowly but surely paralysed my logical mind. The Jane that could question, the Jane that could say, you know what, I'm not sure. Slowly she was hidden away, and my waking and sleeping thoughts were dominated by how I could achieve my weight management initially, then my weight loss. Soon it didn't matter what people thought, and soon I would be going underground with my behaviours and with my thoughts, as it would be unsafe to show my head out of the bunker. If someone knew what I was doing, if someone observed my increasingly different behaviour, they'd want to stop me. So when you're plunged into this darkness, I've often explained to clients who are going through the experience what it's like to discover you can come out the other side. Putting it into words of how this happens is very difficult. I won't deny it. And I'm sitting here now wondering, will I pause this recording? Will I stop the recording? But I'm not. I'm going to keep going. In my experience, I hit rock bottom. I hit a low weight. I hit a very mentally unstable part of life. I was isolated apart from parents and wonderful friends and neighbours that they had in South Wales, Pembrokeshire coast. These people believed in me and gave me hope when really I didn't have much hope in myself. I felt trapped and I felt like this would have been it forever. I even had thoughts of if it was this forever, maybe I don't want to wake up. That wasn't a thought about suicide. It was just if it's this hard each day, sleeping forever feels like a very good option. During this time and during conversations with my mum, I started to question my beliefs. I questioned them openly and I questioned them with her. I was starting to challenge what my mind was saying on a regular basis. My everyday thoughts were that there was no choice, I had no other place to go, there was no other way of living. What I started to realise when I questioned my thinking, when I questioned this anorexic side of my mind, there was no logical answers coming back. There was just a repeated mantra from a stunted child, from an infant mindset, from perhaps a place of my low self-confidence and belief. There was only reason why I needed to keep going down this path, a path where I would lose everything. That was what I was looking at, facing into the abyss of blackness. There is nothing else but this. This started to play on my mind and I could see a chink of light. I wasn't really aware of the chink of light, but I was aware that there was surely something else. I was seeing people around me living differently. They were eating differently. They were thinking differently. They had hope. They were venturing out of their home. They weren't cocooned in four walls, paralysed, unable to break free from their chrysalis. I was stuck, but I felt this was no longer permanent. The harder I pressed and pushed and questioned, crying myself to sleep, crying myself into wakefulness, I started to realise there was so much more. And I started to question, heavily question, and dream my questions. I started to say, what if? And I started to ask, what else? It was during this time that something to this day, I can't explain, happened. But it was after a very fitful night of dreaming and a day of questioning that I suddenly realised I could break free. And it was in an instant. And my experience of breaking free was literally a spontaneous act of doing something different. Doing something different with my parents. They'd asked me if I'd go away. Not actually go away, although I'm sure they felt like saying that. It was to go away with them. Go away with them to my grandmother's. After being very angry with my father, it hit me at the top of the stairs. I could go. It was as if I was breaking out of my prison. All of a sudden, I was shouting down the stairs, "I'll come." I remember there was tears. There was every kind of emotion that night. And my dad took me down to the sea to watch the waves for the first time, certainly at night, and for quite some time, to sit there and watch and listen to the sound of waves hitting the shingle beach. That was my turning point. And to this day, what made that happen? Well, my belief when I look back, and we're going over 20 years now, my belief is that I questioned and challenged my thinking. When I say challenge, this wasn't an aggressive process. It was a process of a consistent belief and a consistent question. I needed to say it out loud, so having somebody to share that question with definitely helped me. The other thing that was important, and I'd like to share this with you, when I was questioning my behaviour out loud with somebody, they were listening, actively listening. They were supporting my questioning, but without giving me solutions. I think that's another key. For anybody that this will help, that's a very important key. Listen. Let the person know that you're listening. So as I broke out from this anorexic haze, of course, that wasn't the end. There was the whole journey through recovery, which I have happily chronicled as going from this, having an awful lot of success, but hitting some dead ends, and I'll talk about that briefly. The most important thing that I recall is I needed to make changes to the routine of an anorexic. So the very next morning I made notes. To this day they're lost, but maybe they'll turn up one day. I made notes, and instead of getting up at 3 a.m, which I did every day, to do my sort of twilight existence. I got up at 7 o'clock and I remember my radio alarm waking me up, and this was the start of a very new life. The moment I woke at 7 instead of 3, I was already aware I was making a significant change. I went down and sat at a breakfast table looking at two people, looking at my parents. This was the first time in years I'd sat and faced a meal of any description with others. I'd locked myself away. I can't remember what I ate. I think it was something warm, and I didn't quite know how to eat. You need to relearn when you haven't been eating in company. Your behaviour and how you eat changes. You have no model. It's like starting from scratch. What I did is I watched the speed at which my parents were eating. I watched how they ate, how they held their knife and fork, and it started from there. So that's a significant part of the story. The dead ends are really something that I'd like to share with you now. The dead ends are important because eating disorders morph. And when they morph, you find yourself getting to points in the recovery process where you get stuck. I call it moments like being in porridge. So one of my moments was, I was going through recovery, I was eating, but my goodness me, the floodgates opened, going for next to nothing of calorie intake, next to nothing in food, to seeing a GP who says, eat everything in sight, high fat, high sugar. I didn't need to be asked or it to be suggested twice. I was on a mission, and it was called recovery. The thing is, my mission turned very quickly into binge eating. So that's the first dead end. When you're encouraging somebody to learn to eat again, to recover, it's important that we manage that carefully, considering how all of those foods can feel like precious, precious rewards and gifts, and very soon you're hooked and in another downward cycle of eating disorders. So it's how we recover and how we learn to re-eat that really matters at this point. So after my binge eating cycle, I started to gain weight, which you'd expect, which you would. And it started quite quickly. At this point, something that I think is hugely important, and I don't hear of it being offered, it's physiotherapy for the wasted body, for the body that has been eaten away by your own distress. Physiotherapy at this point would be ideal. Rehabilitative Pilates, where possible, would be ideal at this point. Nothing was available to me, and I sought something that was extreme at this point. I worked with a bodybuilder. I stood there with men who towered above me with rippling muscles, who kindly helped to rebuild me. But as I say, that was an extreme measure and something that I really shouldn't have had to turn to, and neither should you. So after that experience, the binge eating continued. I became ashamed that I'd gone from that part of recovery to this part of recovery, and I had another issue to deal with, and I was determined to knock it on the head. So I came up with the only thing I could think of at the time, and this was before I got married, maybe a couple of years before I got married, in my early 20s. I started to cut breakfast out, miss meals, and found myself with another issue. Now, I wasn't craving food all day and binging. I was binging in the evening, waiting for my then fiancé to go to bed so that I could raid the fridge. I have no shame in sharing this. It's not something that I've kept to myself. It's something I've shared often, and I hope it will help you see that you're not alone. If you reduce your intake so much, you will binge at the other end. If you can manage it for a day or two, it will take hold at some point. And if not, you dance with the devil, because anorexia is still close at hand. So I went through this period, and I was using exercise and had done throughout my experience with eating disorders, and this really would be termed as bulimia. I wasn't being sick, but I was using food and I was using exercise to offset the food. So this was my style of purging. As I approached the time when I was going to tie the knot, when I was going to enter into this relationship with my soulmate, the man of my dreams, the man I'm married to now, and the man that has been through all of this with me, I decided that I was going to take a new direction. I was going to take what I hoped would be the last big major action I would need to take with this eating disorder. I decided that I was going to release my control. And these words really reach out to all of you who are making a recovery journey and battle with letting go, saying it feels like you can't do it, because I'm here to say you can. When you let go of your behaviour, the behaviour that sits with you, that lives with you, that sleeps with you and wakes with you, when you decide to let go, because you know what? It is too much. It is tiring. There is an alternative, and that alternative is to start doing what you see others doing around you. Others that aren't preoccupied with food. Others that have a life to live and want to get on with it. And food is just a part of it. That's really what I started to do. As with most things that I do, I make a plan, I have a date, and I start it. And the same thing applied to this experience. I made a date, and I was going to start eating breakfast. I was going to put activity into my day that I enjoyed. I wasn't going to slave away at, I think back then it was lots of aerobics classes and what have you. I was going to walk my dog. I was going to put breakfast in place. I was going to get real with myself and put something that I could continue throughout my life in place. That was my changing point. My changing point was the decision that I didn't want it to go on as it was. Now, that didn't mean giving myself up to an eating disorder. That meant taking the control back from the eating disorder and doing what I truly wanted to do. There's so much more I can share, but I'm going to leave it right there, because that's the point at which my life took a real turn. Maybe 21 years ago, 22 years ago, my life turned around. The decision I took was the best I could ever have taken. on that journey of several years, I realized I had more resilience, the ability to change, more than I'd ever known I was capable of. It was the same resilience that got me through anorexia. It was the same resilience that has got me through many things in life. Many of you have that resilience inside you, and I would encourage you to connect with your thoughts, to go inside your mind, to take the control out of the hands of the eating disorder that lives with you right now, and know that you can change. You can be that difference. You can make that difference. You can let go and you can thrive. I reach out to you with this recording, and I'm going to post it here on Audioboo. And I hope if I send this to you, if you stumble across it, if you have an eating disorder or you are living with or loving someone with an eating disorder, perhaps you can play this to yourself, and if they want to listen, you can play it to them. And I hope it will make some sense of something that's very dark, but something that we can recover from. Thank you for taking the time to listen to me today, and I wish you well.